Moving on to agenda item number 12, discussion and possible action on freshwater mussel candidate conservation agreement with assurances by Tiffany Malzahn, Environmental and Compliance Manager.
Your slides are up, Tiffany. You're good.
Hey, I'd like to start by giving a brief background on where we've been with freshwater mussels, because it has been a 10 plus year marathon. Back in 2009, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service issued received a petition from an environmental action group regarding freshwater mussels in Texas, and they issued at that time what they call a 90-day finding that indicated they felt federal protections under the Endangered Species Act for freshwater mussels may be warranted. The three basins being considered were the Brazos, the Lower Colorado, and the Guadalupe. From that point, they moved on to the next step of the listing consideration process, which is a 12-month review. They issued the findings of their 12-month review in 2011, and they indicated that federal protection was warranted, but they were precluded at that time due to species of higher priority, but they put them on what they call a candidate species list. And then during that time, for a little bit, they hung out on the candidate species list while a series of lawsuits spurred by another environmental action group for U.S. Fish and Wildlife not responding to species quickly enough was resolved. And out of that, one of the agreements was the mussels would be picked up in 2018 for formal consideration. During that time, we began working with the Comptroller's Office about 2015. They started a data sharing committee and a freshwater mussel working group. Their initial studies that the Comptroller's Office funded focused mainly on research in the Guadalupe and Colorado and kind of left the Brazos aside. So at that point in time, in 2016, we brought to the board a project called Freshwater Mussel Rapid Risk Assessment, where essentially we entered an interlocal agreement with the Natural Resources Institute at Texas A&M to perform surveys in the Brazos River. One of the biggest problems we had with freshwater mussels is no one really knew how many were out there. They were kind of the forgotten aquatic species. Nobody paid them much attention, so we went out with a Texas A&M researchers and did surveys up and down the main stem of the Brazos, the Navasota, and some up into the Little River system. Through that, we identified several more populations, and that there were initially three mussels in the Brazos under consideration, and through that and some additional genetics work, one of those species eventually fell away from consideration, and that it was much more prevalent and genetically identical to species from Ohio to Mississippi all the way through Texas. So
yeah,
isolation of the population was not what it was originally thought. Did I hear a question?
No question.
Okay. And then at the same time that that work was going on, we worked through with the comptroller was attempting to try to negotiate basically a statewide CCAA to cover those three basins. With that, it involved two other river authorities, municipalities, large and small, county governments, industry, four other state agencies. And unfortunately, in 2017, early 2018, that process kind of fell apart. I think they were just trying to corral too many interests into one cohesive agreement. And in January 2018, they kind of said, hit pause and said, you know, go forth and conquer individually. At that point in time, BRA board authorized us to pursue an individual permit for BRA with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to provide us some regulatory certainty with BRA operations. During that same time, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife published their species status assessment, which I have a slide to discuss a little bit further, on what really helped us get to that decision point. Now, 2 years later, after 2018, we have a completed negotiated freshwater mussel CCAA that I'd like to present and discuss for your consideration for authorization for the general manager to formally submit that to the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. The two mussels that are still under consideration in the Brazos Basin are the Texas fawnsfoot and the false spike. These are very different from zebra mussels. These are native mussels. They burrow down in the sediments and in the gravel bars throughout the basin. Here's a map of the distribution, and you can see the fawnsfoot, which is in purple, runs pretty much all the way down the main stem of the basin, much more populous in the lower basin, with one or two small populations in the Little River system, and that the false spike is solely isolated to the Little River and San Gabriel portion of our basin in very low numbers. Might ask, you know, if why are mussels important? And first and foremost, they're part of the food pyramid. So they're a food source for fish and raccoons. And in the past, there have been commercial harvest licenses issued by Texas Parks and Wildlife for human consumption. And it's my understanding from seniors in our basin that during the Depression and financial hard times, that was a very viable food supply for their families. Additionally, they're filter feeders, and they can have a huge impact on water quality. You can see the difference in the tank that has no mussels versus the tank with mussels. That's a slide from the USGS from a research project. And again, given that they are somewhat sedentary organisms and don't have a great ability to move long distances, they are a very strong indicator of overall ecosystem health and what's happening in your environment. Like I said, in 2018, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife published Species Status Assessment, where that's their main driver before they make a listing decision, where they look at all available data. We certainly submitted all the data we gathered from our 2016 river surveys for their consideration. And what they came out with in the species of status assessment is they identified several threats that they felt existed to the long-term viability of mussel populations. First and foremost was modified and reduced stream flows. And they hit reservoirs, groundwater pumping, and drought scenarios as all being a threat. Water quality, again, wastewater discharges were a primary threat to water quality that the mussels need to survive. Sedimentation, again, they somewhat tied that back to reservoir releases and scouring in the basin during floods, and barriers to fish movements, which is, again, essentially a dam or anything that blocks upward stream flow. The mussels do have a period of their juvenile life stage that is dependent on specific fish hosts. And, of course, the ever-present climate change. But as you can see, they're hitting pretty hard at all avenues of our operations. And you might ask, why do we care? Well, since 1973, the Endangered Species Act has been the most powerful and strongest environmental regulation in the nation. It's been widely upheld in the court system and never substantially defeated. And there is a long history where the ESA has affected state-based water rights and regulations to the point of, you know, limiting the traditional exercise of your rights, restricting or modifying new water projects. And one of the things that can be called is if they think there's anything that our operations have done that causes incidental take or harm of a listed species, we could be subject to enforcement under the Endangered Species Act. Just to give some examples of projects across the country that have had impacts to water supply organizations such as our own, the court cases are not necessarily as important as the results of those. See the TVA versus Hill, it halted construction on a dam. In Riverside Irrigation District versus Andrews, a dam was never built. Carson Truckee Conservancy District v. Clark, that one had a big impact on the statement overall, and that has been one of the most powerful things, is one of the rulings out of that court decision was the endangered species needs for species trump municipal and industrial needs for water. So that established a precedence that if they feel that a species is not receiving enough water, that is more important than municipal or industrial water use. So that was a big one. Columbia Dam project, again, the dam was never completed. And then we've had seen some impacts in Texas and some more recent, you know, Sierra Club versus City of San Antonio, it limited pumping from the aquifer based on spring flows. And the Aransas Project v. Shaw in the Guadalupe Basin, they directly interjected themselves into the TCEQ water rights permitting process. So why have we chosen to go down this path of federal permitting? And we started looking at this early on. It had almost come to the same conclusion the comptrollers had at about the same time, but before we got formally involved in their processes. Given the species becoming endangered, which is highly likely, in my opinion, given the standards U.S. Fish and Wildlife has to meet, I think they check the boxes for an endangered listing. They can certainly prohibit activities that they feel are affecting their listed species and or their habitats. And the biggest thing out of this is federal permitting will get us some regulatory certainty and minimize our exposure to endangered species liabilities down the road, and hopefully minimize future impacts to our water supply operations. So what we have worked on the last 2 years, they have multiple species or species permitting options, some that are before they come out with their listing decision, some after, all with varying levels of effort required. We opted for a candidate conservation agreement with assurances, which is a pre-listing species. So we're taking a little bit of a gamble that these species will be listed, but every indication from U.S. Fish and Wildlife that they've published so far indicates that that's going to be the decision, even though they haven't published their formal listing recommendations yet. So essentially, we're entering into a voluntary partnership for conservation of freshwater mussels in the Brazos Basin with U.S. Fish and Wildlife before they publish their listing decision. In that, we commit to activities that will provide a net conservation benefit to the two species. And as a byproduct, if you're protecting the mussels, we're essentially protecting any other aquatic species. And in the agreement, there is a changed circumstance section that allows for, should other aquatic species come up for consideration over the term of the permit, that through a minor amendment process, we can go back and add those species into coverage under the CCAA. The biggest thing we get is we've committed up front to what we're going to do to help conserve the species. And if the species are listed, we will not be required to take any additional conservation measures. Out of that, we will also receive an enhancement of survival permit that has incidental take protection. So should something occur in our basin, even though we think it is unlikely that our operation should cause a negative and substantial impact to the freshwater mussels, if something does occur, as long as we have complied with all the conditions of the CCAA, BRA is protected and they cannot pursue enforcement against us. This agreement does have a termination clause that allows it to defer any reason at any time. BRA is not happy with the agreement, or U.S. Fish and Wildlife is not happy with us, the agreement can be terminated. The status of the CCA, it has gone through several levels of informal review by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they submitted a request for formal consideration that we submitted in December 2019. It was originally planned to go to the April board meeting for your consideration, but of course due to COVID that didn't happen, and we anticipate the phase one part of this project, which was the permitting, will be completed within budget. Phase two would be implementation of the conservation measures. I would anticipate that the permit, if we submit it by the end of this fiscal year, will be executed sometime in 2021. It is a 20-year term permit. There were options to go longer, but the longer you go, the higher your requirements for conservation, and you had to take a lot of consideration for long-term climate change, which made it a much more difficult process. So we thought 20 years would give us a good term of regulatory certainty, and then we'll have the option to reconsider whether we want to renew the agreement at that time or not. The estimated expense of implementing the conservation measures over that time is $3.8 million, and that includes $200,000 for contingencies. This is just a chart as we mapped out the years and what activities we'll be doing of how that $3.8 million will be distributed over the 20-year term. And our next steps is if you approve the general manager to execute the agreement, we'll submit it to U.S. Fish and Wildlife for formal consideration. And once we receive an executed permit from Fish and Wildlife Service, we'll return to the board of directors to request authorization to begin the phase two implementation of conservation activities. Are there any questions?
Yes. Tiffany. So yes. Tiffany, I have a comment.
Okay.
So, and a testament to David, Tiffany has been with the BRA for some time, and the history of this particular agenda item she outlined. And so that is a testament to the staff that we have at the BRA and the ability to retain them and to get the history and be able to relate to the board where we've been and where we're going in the future. So Tiffany, thank you for that. And David, thank you for your leadership. And I appreciate the out clause on that. So thank you to Lori Lee for making sure we have an exit strategy on this.
Thank you.
This is Director Savage. I also had a question and a comment. You know, obviously, thanks. You know, you've been doing a 10-year marathon, and you know, we've got it to the finish line. And you know, congratulations on all that work. I'm familiar with some of the impact the Endangered Species Act can have on things. Now, this may be an obvious question, but we're putting this copper ion in, you know, to control the zebra mussels, and I didn't recall the geography. You know, that wouldn't have any impact or a negative impact on these species, would it? Adding that copper, I mean, it might be diluted out to, or it would have no impact, but
there with the pipeline from Stillhouse to Georgetown, it's a very low dose copper infusion, but then it's going into a reservoir that's going to further dilute it, and it would have to move downstream through Lake Granger, which would usually only occurs pretty much during flood operation, so you've got more diluting factors. So it should be a very minimal to even non-detective level of copper by the time you reach the freshwater mussel populations in the San Gabriel.
Okay, just want to make sure that had been thought through. Thanks.
Madam Chair, this is Director Wilson. I have a question for Tiffany. Tiffany, have these CCAA agreements, and then you talked about an enhancement of survival permit and incidental take protections, have any of those been tested in the courts?
Not to my knowledge, but it is certainly always a potential. There, like I said, the most of the court system lawsuits are not brought by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service suing a water right holder, but generally by an environmental action group. So if they don't think at some point in time that this has been effective enough, that is always a possibility. However, working through this process, this has been reviewed. I think we went through 8 or 9 different reviews with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And usually what we see with the federal agencies is once they back something, they will stand with us in such an agreement that, yes, we have met all the requirements. I'm just not aware of any of those lawsuits involving a CCAA.
Okay, I was just curious because I am aware, and I know probably all of us are, that the courts look at things differently sometimes than we do or a federal agency. So I just wanted to know if it'd been tested. So thank you.
All right. Seeing or hearing no other comments, can you please read your resolution?
Be it resolved that the Board of Directors of the Brazos River Authority hereby authorizes the General Manager, CEO, to enter into a candidate conservation agreement with assurances with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for the conservation of freshwater mussels in the Brazos Basin.
You've heard the resolution. Is there a motion to adopt?
So moved, Leslie.
A motion made by Director Leslie and a second made by
Director Wilson.
Please poll the board.
Presiding Officer Flores.
Yes.
Director Tallis.
Yes.
Director Taylor.
Yes.
Director Abraham.
Yes.
Director Boren. Director Fernandez.
Yes.
Director Henderson.
Yes.
Director Huber.
Yes.
Director Crone.
Yes.
Director LaChance.
Yes.
Director Lattimore.
Yes.
Director Leslie.
Yes.
Director Lloyd.
Yes.
Director Luton.
Yes.
Director Rankin.
Yes.
Director Ruiz.
Yes.
Director Sanderson.
Yes.
Director Savage.
Yes.
Director Smith.
Yes.
Director Wilson.
Yes.